Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
I'm here.
Maddie.
I'm back. I probably won't be here next week, though. So,
you know. Yeah, or me.
Every other week kind of thing.
Next week, it'll just be me, I think, talking to myself, doing a little
Isn't that how it normally goes?
Yeah, normally. Maybe I need to look into getting some new co-hosts. Apply below. Anyway, before we dive into this week's action-packed episode where we've got a couple of games to recap and none to preview because the international break is upon us, thank you, as always, to our Substack founding members, Des Windsor, McGlynn, Ali Tarine, Tito Mack, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ, Mats. We are going to obviously be keeping going with the bonus content over the international break, including a couple of bonus podcasts in that time as well. Topics to be confirmed, so you know, get your suggestions in and we might just cover that. But yeah, thank you to everyone who's been supporting what we do on Substack. Today's article that went out was a loan report on all of the players that have gone out both domestically and abroad and how they're getting along. You can try 7 days for free if you haven't done so already. All right, boys, bit of Jekyll and Hyde shit again from this team to talk about. Wouldn't have it any other way. Actually, I would. I'd rather just win every game, to be honest, but here we are. We begin with Champions League action, though, against Paris Saint-Germain at San Siro. So, yes, on Tuesday night, it was, I guess, what many were rightly calling a must-win game against PSG at home, given that we had amassed just 2 points from our first three group stage games. Probably against the toughest opponent in the group as well on paper, and one that battered us 3-0 in the reverse fixture. I'll get my humble brag out the way. I was there for this game and I really bloody enjoyed it. Like said in the intro, this is going to be a podcast that's split in two halves in terms of us being happy and us raging. So let's get the positive stuff out of the way first. What a way to respond. This was a really good performance.
It was. Did you get a souvenir at the game?
I did. And I found out today that even though they're fake money, they're actually worth more than a real dollar because they're reselling online for up to €5.
Wow.
So I've sold both of yours. Sorry, lads. Sweet. No, in the end, I got three of them. Basically, what happened was, as you go in, there are bundles of these Donnarumma dollars, or Dollarummas, I guess, that are attached to like the plastic sheet, white or black, that you had to hold up when the teams came out to form the display that obviously everyone saw on the cameras and whatnot. But when we got to our seat, there was no money laid out. I guess people had been going around taking them already, or they didn't do certain parts of the stand because they didn't need to do every seat. They were just putting out bundles of rolled up money. And then as Donnarumma came out for his warm-up, and as happened during the game when we got a corner and stuff like that, they were literally just throwing bundles and bundles of money. So my guess is about 90% of it will have ended up on the pitch, but people have clearly gone round and scooped a few of them up, and now you can actually buy a bundle like with the rubber band and everything for I think €30 on like Vinted or whatever one of the reselling websites.
I know what AJ is doing after the podcast.
Yeah,
I thought about it. Until you said 30, I was like, I might grab some.
That's for the bundle. You can still get an individual one for 3 to 5, or I can just give you one. But yeah, that was a nice. That was a nice souvenir. And then
we plan that next Italy trip and it gets cancelled.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. Also, they're not paper. They're like fully, as in the correct material. I don't know if you've ever held one of the new English notes. They're not paper. They're like plasticky almost. Yeah. So yeah, they don't rip or tear. They're like that. They're really, really good. So to say that they've had probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of these things printed, fair play. That is.
It makes you wonder how much they spent to like make all those.
Yeah,
I think Curva said we'll go through no expense. Like there'll be no or Curva whatever. We'll go through no, expense.
I think they might have been fine. They make a little bit on the side, you know, from ticket sales and whatnot. So that was good anyway. The atmosphere for this game, just speaking from obviously being in the stadium, was really, really like. I would say it was loud and it was like a typical European night, but I would say it was like boisterous. It was almost on edge, as if all the fans knew what this meant. Like we had to respond because we'd been shit in recent weeks. There's no two ways about it. Also because Donnarumma was coming back, because we needed to make PSG feel uncomfortable, and what the result what a positive result, which we ended up getting, would mean in the Champions League scheme of things. It was a really lively crowd, and that was good to see. But we fell behind early to a set-piece goal, and that was no bueno.
I guess that's where I come in, huh? Yeah, I mean, every fan obviously did know what was on the line, right? Like, if you're going to a Champions League game, well, I guess there's some people who just show up to show up, but I feel like those are harder tickets to get. So the people who are going know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Skriniar scored that first one, and it was Loftus-Cheek's man. I do want to give him a little bit of a pass on it, because we have the, I guess, advantage of a bird's eye view when we're watching it on TV or in the stadium from a few rows above them or whatever. We could see where the ball is going. We see him leave his man. From his point of view, though, he's staring ahead at the ball. He could see it going up, and he sees the people. And what you can gauge with your eyes from that angle is obviously different. So just basing it on what we saw for the rest of the game, anytime they had a set piece, we immediately went for a counter. So from Loftus-Cheek's point of view, he was on Skriniar until he saw the ball, and I believe he thought it was going to either Tomori or Musa. I don't remember who it was there, but it looked like they were about to get it. We were going to win that header, and then he got off Skriniar to run for the counter and would have been where the ball would have went had we have got it. But obviously we didn't. He mistimed that, so it went to his man. But I don't think it was him not tracking Skriniar as much as it was he thought possession was changing there.
This was Pobega or Krunic, you would be putting him on a skewer and roasting him over a fire.
Funny what credit in the back.
Because it's Loftus-Cheek. You're like, well, you know, I can kind of see why he thought that this was going to happen. Like, yo, stay with your man the entire time. Like,
I agree. He's still at fault. I'm saying he's at fault, but I understand the thought process behind it.
So next time Krunic or Pobega do this, I want to understand the thought process behind it.
Their thought process.
Yeah, but they've got to have a brain. There we go. There's no thought. Do you know what's frustrating? Enough. And we're going to talk about it, obviously, in the second game that we cover. But we conceded two corners in the exact same way, which is an objectively bad corner to the near post, like a low dipping ball outswinger, just flicked on by Marquinhos in this case to the far post where a man is totally unmarked. Now, you'd think we'd learn from that, but you can say, okay, PSG, they've got quality. They're a team that are going to threaten from set pieces because they're a big side as well. But to then concede a very similar goal a few days later shows to me that, and people did say in the comments, I can't believe we conceded set pieces after I said in last week's episode that we got better at defending them. You know, take the rough with the smooth on that. But it was a poor goal to concede, but I think, of course, it had to be Skriniar as well, ex-Inter. He seemed to enjoy that one. It is what it is. The importance, though, here in wrestling this game back was how quickly we responded. And we responded really well, like very, very rapidly. And we were attacking in a similar way the entire time. Get the ball wide as quickly as you can and cut it back to a dangerous area inside the box. Loftus-Cheek had one and Musa had one, where it was cut back to around the penalty spot, maybe just behind. But unfortunately, in both cases, the shot was straight at Donnarumma. Those probably should have gone in on another day. And then the equaliser came again on a break where we had more numbers than them. Giroud gets fed, ball parried. Leao bicycle kick. He's attempted a few of them. He finally got one.
Oh, it's the second one this season, isn't it?
I think the first one was kind of like a side.
Oh, the Roma one. Oh, that was a side
sure,
volley. But
whatever. If we want to split hairs on it, fine. But yeah, I mean, it was a great fucking goal. It should have been a Giroud goal, but obviously he shot it straight at the keeper. And I say the keeper, Donnarumma. Everyone knows who it is. And then Leao just happened to not stop his run. He just was there and obviously put it in perfectly. It was interesting because typically with a bicycle kick, you're thinking you're just going to hit it straight, you know, but. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how he did, because he didn't whiff the ball, but he definitely didn't aim to go far post. Yeah, it just didn't work that well.
Go down, though? Like, didn't...
It was controlled.
Donnarumma just, like, get... Because Donnarumma is notorious for being able to get to the ground very slowly, right?
Mm-hmm. But yeah. He's a big man.
Didn't it just, like, go down and he just couldn't get down? Or was that the...
Yeah, I mean, it was heading down, but I don't think it touched the ground until it was in the net. Or like, right on the line.
I mean, I know you said the Giroud shot was straight at Donnarumma, but it was down to his left, so he had to stop it down there. And then as soon as he gets up, he realizes that Liao's about to shoot, so he can't then get back down to his right. But Liao did a good job, I suppose, in somehow picking out the only area of the goal that was unguarded, because there were players in and around Donnarumma on the line. So, I mean, yeah, it was a finish from 6 or 7 yards, which he should be putting in, and maybe he didn't need to do it like that. Maybe he could have just headed it in or whatever, but it was important for him to score. You know, he'd gone
He would have scored if it was a header, to be honest with you. From that angle, I feel like it would have just kind of looped up, and it would have been slow enough for someone to just be there.
What? Potentially. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, look,
how he hit it though, too, right?
Well, yeah, but just knowing that, I mean, it was a bicycle, so obviously his back was to goal. So if he's running to get a header, he's got to hit backwards. And
assuming that he was facing the goal, not still backwards.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess if he got there in time to turn around, but I don't know. I feel like everything just had to be so perfect for that one to go in. And
yeah,
this was just the perfect storm of how this goal was going to be created, you know?
And an embarrassed Donnarumma.
Yeah, that was nice.
That's the most important part, besides scoring, but, you know.
Well, speaking of embarrassing Donnarumma, there was another one right after that, huh? Good old Ollie G, and he got the posterized Skriniar, so got double revenge there. And who had the assist on that? Was it Teo?
Teo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They did a little quickly taken cross, and it was interesting because it was one of those things where, you know, typically it's us who turns off when we think a foul should be given to us, right? Yeah. You'll see a player go down, and everyone just stops and throws their hands up and starts crying and playing victim. And then the play continues and we concede and everyone's like, oh, what the heck, dude? But it wasn't us this time. It was PSG. And we took advantage of that, something that you see elite sides do. Like Liverpool did it to beat Barcelona and make it to the Champions League final. They won it. Yeah, the corner taken quickly, but this was obviously not a corner. It was a cross. It was fantastic. I don't remember who put in the initial shot because I do think we had a shot that was then deflected and blocked and then passed to Teo, who ran it up and threw it in.
It was attacked down the right side. Pulisic crossed it in, I believe, towards Giroud. It was over his head. And then Liao
was on the ground.
Liao and Hakimi went for a ball at the back post. And it was really it was a soft coming together. Like, there was nothing in it. It wasn't a foul either way. But then for some reason, as Hakimi's got back to his feet, he's then gone back down again. Clearly his shin was hurt or whatever. But as the ball's gone all the way and perhaps PSG think it's gone out for a throw-in. Also, you can see as Teo collects the ball to wind up another cross, Skriniar is on the floor picking up a dollar and throwing it to the side. Now, whether he slipped on one before or something, I don't know, but that's on the website. Search it, you'll find it. Yeah, he's bending down, throwing a dollar to the side as the cross is coming in, and then Giroud, bang, posterized like Mark Haley on Colavati. That was incredible because it was an important time to score as well, not long after halftime. We were wondering if, after scoring the equalizer quickly, the game might just drift out again. PSG had hit the crossbar with Dembele, I believe. They'd had
the crossbar a few times.
They had a couple of scary moments as well where Mbappe nearly got through, but Mike was quick off his line. So it was looking like PSG might have just got back in the ascendancy after that equaliser. But then scoring so early in the second half, it allowed us to all of a sudden manage the game, which is something we don't get to do very often. And when we have done it in the past this season, it's not gone particularly well, as we're going to talk about. But that was massive. And, you know, we from that point onwards, had the better moments. Okafor drew a really good save from Donnarumma, and, you know, we've laughed at him, so got to give him some plaudits. That was a world-class save to deny Okafor what would have been a massive goal for his confidence. Yes, we defended very deep for the last 20-25 minutes. Yes, we didn't make a substitution until, I want to say, the first... Yeah, so the players out there were flat out. There's no two ways about it. And perhaps it wasn't pretty. But finally, we showed a bit of organisation, a bit of application. The players were fighting so hard to hang on to that result. There was 7 minutes of added time. So by the time we walked out the stadium, it was like 11:05 at night, local time. But yeah, that meant a lot. I know it's all been undone by what we saw on Saturday, but just trying to remember how it all felt in that moment, I think that was massive. It was a statement win, and now it's reopened things again, you know, with Dortmund beating Newcastle and them now being bottom. And stuff.
I mean, we obviously we analyzed the whole group stage on the bonus podcast this previous Friday, but it really does open it up. You know, we could finish in any of the four spots now, depending on how we do and how everyone else does. And it's, I don't know, it's almost like every team is now in a must-win situation, even Dortmund on top, you know, and PSG in second and Newcastle in fourth. Everything's a must-win situation for every team. So it's going to be an intense final two games. I think we can actually sneak both of them against Dortmund and Newcastle. But yeah, man, it's going to be really tough. But yeah, exactly. We could lose both. We could draw both. You know, I wouldn't be shocked with any result.
Yeah, literally. And that's kind of what we were hoping for with this group, you know. The reason that people were finding it hard to call who might go through is because, I guess, of the parity and that each team has their threat on each day. And if anybody had to pick who might finish bottom, people would have said Dortmund. And going into the final two games, they've probably been the most impressive side, beating Newcastle home and away. So here we are. Yeah, we need to pick out some key performers from this game. I think Loftus-Cheek was an absolute engine. He was a bulldozer. Like, when we signed him, I did an interview with the Athletic's Chelsea guy called Simon Johnson, and he was saying that one of the things that that we'll be surprised by is when he gets the ball and he goes running 10, 20, 30 yards, players, big players who come up and try and get the ball off him will just bounce off him. Like, they will not get close to the ball. He will just hold them off with his pure size and his frame. We saw that plenty of times on Tuesday night. He was, as I say, a bulldozer. And he was so often the source of a lot of our threat on the counter-attack, because he picked the ball up deep in our half, perhaps from a PSG set piece or an attack that fell apart, and he would take it into the final third and we'd get an opportunity from it. And I think that being his first start since he suffered that muscle problem, it was just a reminder of how much we've missed him. He was right up there as a man of the match candidate for me. I've got some stats actually to back this up somewhere. Hold on. Yeah, in the game against PSG, he carried the ball 262 metres, which was the most of any player. He carried the ball forward for 183 metres, because not all of it is direct, which was also first. He drew three fouls, he won 10 duels, and he completed 5 dribbles. I mean, those are incredible stats.
Yeah.
He led us in pretty much every department on the
physical front. How far is the field 100 metres, or is it 110?
It's often about between 100 and 110 yards. So to convert that into meters, it's just...
I wasn't sure, because in England or in Europe, it's all meters. So I don't know why they'd have the field in yards.
It is strange that we've still got a 6-yard box and an 18-yard box and penalties from 12 yards when everything else is generally meters.
Right.
But here we are. That's
it's that American...
Yeah, it's that NFL mind. But yeah, he was nuts. And also... we kept Mbappe pretty quiet. You know, he had a couple of moments where I was like, fuck, this guy's good. He dribbled past Calabria a couple of times, but I think Calabria needs that sometimes. And then he switched on and stabilized well. Yeah. But the thing with that is, and he did, to be honest. And it was important, though, that he could rely on a double teaming. And that was thanks to Tomori, who I thought was absolutely incredible, to be honest. You could maybe say that he was partly at fault for the first goal that PSG scored in the reverse game, where he gave Mbappe 3 or 4 yards, which is all he needs to get that shot off and find the bottom corner. He learned his lesson big time, and he was absolutely outstanding. Both the players on the right side of the defence were really, really good. I thought Chiao was good as well. And Teo got the assist and looked well up for it. That was a good performance from the back four in general.
Yeah, I don't know who I want to pick as my top, because I was leaning towards Loftus-Cheek, but he was at fault for the first goal, so I don't think that's necessarily fair. I think I'll go Liao. He did get the UEFA man of the match. Obviously, he had the first goal, the equalizer, and then it was at a very important time. Plus, it's a bicycle, so that's always fun to see. And his work rate was top the entire time. I mean, he made a sliding challenge in our own box. When was the last time we saw Liao even in our box? Like, he doesn't track back,
that's true.
He did this time. He continued to push forward even after the pass to Giroud to get in a position that he could get that bicycle kick. So, I mean, he was running end-to-end the whole time, and it's something we haven't seen from him. It's something we've been begging to see from him for a while. And most of the, you know, legendary coaches and analysts or whatever have been saying his work rate is his main flaw. Well, he showed up against PSG on Tuesday. Obviously, it took its toll because he was subbed off 10 minutes into Lecce, but we'll get there. But
does that just prove what they're saying, though? This was PSG, a duel against Mbappe, albeit other ends of the field. Bright lights, San Siro, world watching, and he puts the effort in, whereas in other games he hasn't. Maybe he's just proven exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, I don't think it does anything else. I mean, I think he uses it as motivation, right? He hears that and he says, okay, let me show you. But at the end of the day, like, he does have lazy games. His work rate isn't always there. You see oftentimes he's just walking. And I know that Messi quote from earlier this year, he's like, if you walk more, you see what's going on. And like, yeah, I get that. That's true. But you still need to you know, when you're not Messi, you got to do shit.
I was saying, Messi sees a game like a chess game, right? Like, he's like, all right, you move here. I move that, you know, like.
He's also always like that. Like, Messi's a player who's had systems built around him for, you know, 20 years. So it's all right to say that when you've got the freedom. And I think Pioli does give Leao the freedom to do that. But yeah, in games like that one against PSG, you know, he needed to put in a shift defensively because he was up against Hakimi. Hakimi gets forward a lot. If he'd have been the spare man, then Leao would have looked so out of place, you know. But no, it was a good response from him and a good performance. I noticed when he scored his goal, he did a little shush thing that was aimed at the crowd, but I don't think it was aimed at them, if you know what I mean. It was directed that way.
I figured it was aimed at the camera that was in front of the crowd.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah, possibly. But I think it was aimed more at the criticism that he's been getting in recent weeks. And for me, like, it was a great performance. It was a pleasure to witness it live because he had many runs where he beat multiple men and you're just like, this is what this guy can do. But I'm also, you know, the other devil on my shoulder saying, this is what he can do, and yet he doesn't do it so many times. He just doesn't look up for it.
Why is that? That's a whole nother. Well,
yeah, you could do a whole episode on that.
I mean, I watched, I know this isn't... maybe this isn't the comparison to make, I don't know, but they're of a similar age. I think, actually, the guy I'm about to mention is a year younger. But I watch sometimes on a Sunday night La Liga games, and specifically Vinicius Jr. No matter who the opponent is, he is so up for it. You know, he wants to prove that he is the best left winger in the world, or at least up there. You know, Mbappe would have something to say about that. But he's just always on it. And while ever
you know
Leao
began,
go on.
Ancelotti. It started after Benzema told someone, "Don't pass to Vinny; he's playing against us."
Oh yeah.
And he has not slowed down since.
That's the level
because he fucked up like the entire first half.
Selfish, yeah. So yeah, there's still a consistency level to aim at, basically. But yeah, your man of the match, Leao. I will go to Mori. He has the most interception.
Oh, his cheek. Okay.
Ah, no, I'm switching to Tomori. Yeah.
Is that all?
He has the most interceptions of any player in the Champions League with 10. There you go.
I'm going to do Calabria, surprisingly. But
I like
it. He shut Mbappe down. And to shut down one of the best left backs or right wingers, left wingers in the world. Sorry, I'm all over the place. You know, he gets shit on every week here by AJ, right? Also by people on Twitter, and he just like made them
celebrated when you said
AJ has not shit on Calabria since he saw him play live. But prior to that, AJ shit on him like he shits on Pobega.
Most of the time, perhaps just last season. They didn't do any of that. Just let it go.
It's gonna be all kinds.
He was good, man, and like he always plays to the occasion. So, like, when we play a shit team, he plays shit. When we play against Mbappe,
well, he did well against Napoli.
Hey,
so he did well against
Cavaradonna again. Flop of the match is a tough one because I genuinely believe that this was a full team effort, and that if anybody had have had a stinker, then we probably wouldn't have got the result, to be honest. And I can't pick Loftus-Cheek though, because, you know, he definitely wasn't the worst player on the pitch, even though he was the one who perhaps lost his man for the first goal. I might have to say Reinders, and I don't really believe it, but I just think that out of the midfield and I don't believe that, to be honest. That's quite harsh.
I know can't who pick anyone I'm going to pick. He'll be doing it, and I feel like just knowing what's coming up ahead, I'm going to get shit on by my compatriots here, but I think Pulisic was the worst on the pitch. I thought it was clearly the worst on the pitch in the first half. Second half, he improved a little bit, but not a whole lot. And then he came off injured towards the end of the game in stoppage time. I just don't think he was ready to come back after his previous injury against Napoli. I think he was kind of pushed in there.
No, but I think that with Loftus-Cheek, he looked better than he has in the past couple weeks.
I just think he's super ineffective. I don't have any stats. I'm sure stats will, you know, contradict what I'm about to say, but I feel like he was getting beat every time. You know, actually, I think he did well to dribble around people, but when he wasn't making the dribbles, when he was getting ready to do that, they just kept putting a foot in and dispossessing him. I feel like his passes were too hot.
He won 5 out of 5 ground duels, 2 out of 3 tackles, 2 out of 2 accurate crosses.
How many passes did he do?
That doesn't feel right.
74% accuracy for passes.
What was it?
74%.
I mean, that's okay. Like, this is a good one. Okay,
it's
great.
It's not like, you know.
But I don't know. I feel like out of everyone, he's the guy that I remember picking out thinking, going into halftime, oh, this is not a good game for Pulisic.
Yeah.
I think he's played better, but I also think that, one, he was rushed back, right? But two, like, I honestly do think that he looked better with Loftus-Cheek. Because at the beginning of the season, when he was in his mm-hmm. best form, was when Loftus-Cheek was playing. And it also has to go back to, like, the connection between the defense, midfield, and attack. Like, yeah. The past, like, 4 weeks or since Loftus-Cheek has been out, like, the midfield has been lost, right? Yeah. So, you know.
I did put it in the chat, but a little factoid, a little stat. Every game where we have dropped points in all competitions has been a game that Loftus-Cheek has either not played or didn't play the full 90. So
that is correct, yeah.
What does that mean for his importance? I don't know, but
means he's very important, I guess.
Exactly. He should never play again.
That three, man, that three looked really good to me, to be honest. We thought that it was going to be a 4-3-3 with the lineup, but particularly looking at it in that first half, how we set up off the ball, Loftus-Cheek was definitely further forward and he was given more license to run forward with the ball. But that three looks like the best three to me, especially when we don't have, you know, Krunic and Adli. It's not happening, is it, for either of them, to be honest? Like, we thought that one of them would probably make that position in front of the defence their own. Krunic has spent time out injured, purely clearly still has trust issues with Adli, especially in the biggest games. So when I saw that three, I thought it'd be interesting to see how they play if it is indeed a three. But it tended to be Reinders and Musa playing a bit deeper, and it worked. Like, they had the energy, they were good at then finding a man so we could break at pace. Neither of them are natural defensive midfielders. I say natural. I think they're both natural box-to-box players. But they did a job and they protected the back four well, and it was good to see them three together. On the Pulisic thing, one thing I'll give him a lot of credit for was, first of all, I think he got double-teamed a lot. So whether PSG picked him out as the main threat or what, I don't know, because Leao was certainly open a fair bit more. But also, he worked so hard. Like, he knew he had to track back on that right side to give a bit of cover for Mbappe, especially with players overlapping. That was something you pick up on live when you can see the entire field at once, is how much distance there is to cover. And Pulisic did work really hard. He ran himself into the ground, and I'm not surprised that he couldn't make the next game, to be honest. So, yeah. Maddie, have you picked a flop?
I don't know who to pick.
It's hard.
No, that's Cheek for giving up his man in the box.
That's
a crazy pick.
That's brutal.
Hey, if he didn't do that, we could have had a clean sheet. So
maybe
not.
Yeah.
No, okay. I mean, dude was a fucking tank.
Yeah, he was. He was the
fucking wildest thing you've said.
Yeah, he's like a 7.5/8 out of 10. And he might have been the flop.
I'll say Musa. He had the lowest match rating, so.
Well, okay.
Oh, right. Wait. Did the Americans pick 2 Americans as flops?
I don't think so, because I was told we were biased.
Okay. Yeah. Steph, take note. Just, you know.
Steph's not.
And the Englishman picks Tamari / Loftus-Cheek as the two men in the match. Who's the biased one now? Yeah. Right, let's move on from the Champions League action to trip to Lecce. So from the which was the bad one, Jekyll or Hyde?
I don't fucking know.
Bonnie and Clyde, they were both bad, weren't they? The Cray twins were both bad. I'm going to say that Jekyll is good and Hyde is bad. So we went from Jekyll against PSG to Hyde against Lecce. This was going so well after 45 minutes. Like the Napoli game, we'd scored two goals in relatively quick succession. Giroud got his sixth league goal of the season in his 10th game. And he marked his 100th appearance with a goal as well for us in all competitions, which is fantastic. Reinders had scored. We were in complete control. This, I think, considering everything, given that we had less rest than Lecce, we were coming from a very exhausting game physically and mentally against PSG, a trip all the way down to the southern boot of Italy for a Saturday early kickoff. It was a really good first half. I was enjoying life at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Liao got subbed off after 10 minutes for injury, and now he's supposedly going to miss all the way through to the Dortmund game, including that Dortmund game, so... real scary there, but besides that, yeah, it started off well. Obviously, Giroud had a header. Teo had the assist. Reinders finally got his goal. Finally. I thought, here we go. He's going to stop shooting every chance he gets. I was wrong. He hit the post shortly thereafter when there was better options a few times.
Go at it.
Yeah, I mean, knowing what happened, in hindsight, like, he's pissing me off again. But in the moment, I was like, all right, cool. He did it. Like, it wasn't the best goal, but it was a goal, and that's what counts. And, yeah, there was opportunities, man. We looked so well. We shut down everything. I think Teo had a yellow card, but besides that, like, there were no real incidents on our end. We just went in there into halftime 2-0 up. We were sitting pretty, and then all of a sudden it was Napoli all over again. Yunus Musah came on, and oh boy,
to play
did he
a weird position.
Yeah, he played back, but it hadn't. Yes, it's a weird
with Florenzi on the bench.
That was
I thought
weird Pioli
did that wrong, but I don't think it had anything to do with the mistakes he made that led to both goals. Corner, you know, if we're going to blame Loftus-Cheek, like, it was the exact same spot. You know, it was almost the exact same thing entirely.
But he was getting ready to go on the counterattack, so it's okay.
Yeah, except I don't think we were as close to getting the first header. And I could be wrong there. I don't know. I haven't watched the goals back. In fact, when they scored their third, they got caught off. I didn't even know it got caught off until later because I just turned the TV off immediately. Yeah. I was like, I'm done. I'm not watching this. But anyways, yeah, so he let in the first one there, and that was rough. But it was like, okay, you know, one goal. We're still in it. It's fine. And then a few minutes later, not too long after, they scored another one. Again, Musah had the ball. Teo was down, and he could have just passed it out, you know. And just stop play, because at that moment, right, when you're up and they just scored, the idea should be slow down the game, don't let them build on their momentum. Instead, he tried to did he play a pass or did he try to dribble through them?
Tried to dribble and got tackled. Yeah,
he got tackled, went to the
just kick it. You don't have to directly pass it out of play if you've not got team, because Taylor's injured on the other side, left back position. Perhaps he can't see through all the bodies that he's down. Someone should be shouting at him, kick it out or kick it long. If you have to kick it long down the flank, that doesn't matter. The last thing you can do is lose the ball in your own third. Like, I've seen so many people on Twitter or X, whatever, blaming Pioli and saying, you're putting this guy on at right back. He's out of position. That's the change that cost us the game. No, Musah directly cost us the game. Like, it's very rare that I would pick out one player and say that he was the reason for our entire failings. And it feels hard to be doing this, given that he's been nothing short of impressive, really, since arriving in the summer. I think he's been one of the players who's settled in best. And he started, I think, 9 games in a row when you include internationals. So, like, he's ploughing on through, and he was brought on obviously during the game at this point at right back, which is not a position that he's familiar with. But as AJ rightly said, the two errors that he made had nothing to do with the position that he was brought on, and it was just a simple footballing IQ thing.
And it's not like he was there the entire time. He was there for like 15 minutes.
You know, and then he made the change he should have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand the frustrations at the change that Pioli made, and all the stuff that Maddie's been saying in previous weeks about him making bad subs is perfectly symbolised by that substitution. However, you can be angry at both things, and I think in this case I'm most angry that an individual player through their lapses in attention has cost us two goals in 3 minutes, because that is ultimately what happened. It is a shame. It is, for me, the 1 out of 10 performance that I've seen so far from any player this season.
Well, and the frustrating part is, when we saw Musa warming up on the sidelines, I'm thinking, great, he's coming in for Krunic, who has again had another bad half. Then we find out Calabria got hurt, and I'm thinking, why?
Like, yeah.
Why?
There's two defenders on the bench.
He said it was for speed, but why? Like, we're 2-0 up. We don't need more speed. We need someone who's going to be able to play defense, you know? And and it's not that Moose is a bad defender. It's just that he's not a defender. He's a midfielder.
Yeah, but, like, at the end of the day, you're a professional footballer, right? Like, you should be able to play competently most of the positions on the pitch, right?
We are like, he hasn't been on the right before. He's played.
But, like, Giroud stepped in goal.
Oh,
right.
But that was for a few minutes, and he got pretty lucky with that.
Still, though, like,
but okay, so put Leao as a center back.
Center mid to right back is a much different, less like aggressive change than striker to goalie, right?
Yeah, no, of course.
Like,
but
that Verona game, when we beat Verona 1-0 to end, like, it was Leao who scored the winner in that one. And we had a bit of an injury crisis, and we started a 3-4-3. Who was playing right wing back from the start? It was Musa.
He's played.
He's wing back, full back. Okay, I get it. There are differences in the way that the position is played, but he has played wide before for us, and he looked pretty good in that game. At least that's what most people thought.
I thought he was playing a right mid, though. Did he play wing back?
Yeah, he played as a wing back.
The same thing, Taylor was the other wing. Depending on where we're at in the field, if we're defending.
But I thought it was a 4-4-2. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of a different game.
The back.
No, the 4-4-2 was that was the Udinese game.
But, like, before we started to record, I was like, AJ, did we switch to three at the back when Musa came on? Like, what the fuck
happened? That's what I thought was going to happen as well, and it didn't. I know that there are going to be people in the comments who are like, no, Pioli should never put him there. It was his decision that cost us. I just disagree. Like, he can't go out and kick the ball for the players, unfortunately. He, in the first half, can't be the one who, he's stood next to Reinders when he goes through on goal for the second time and clearly has options to square it to, but instead shoots once again at the near post. Like, decisions are costing us here big time. I am not saying don't blame Pioli.
Where does that knowledge start from, though, right? Like Pioli has to be able to instill that stuff in these players.
I still think Pioli got it wrong.
He always gets it wrong, man. Yeah. This is the third league game in a row that we've dropped points.
What if I were to tell you that it was the fifth?
My point further.
Yeah. We haven't won a game since the last year.
Foot mob only goes back so far, okay?
Yeah.
No, we haven't won since the
Pioli is like the league. It's a mindset thing. He's not instilling the right mindset in these players. And it's clear.
Which is why we hired Zlatan as a team psychologist. It's ridiculous. But I think Pioli should never have put Musa at right back. I think Musa's mistakes were nothing to do with being a right back. However, he shouldn't have been on the pitch at that moment, right? Like, when you have Florenzi on the bench, who is a right back, who we signed specifically to be our backup right back, that's the guy you bring on. It's the guy he brought on 15, 20 minutes later when you realize, shit, I made a mistake. So I guess good on you for correcting it, but at that point it was too late. You know, it was two goals in the net. So I don't know. I put a lot of blame on Pioli still, and I don't want people to think I don't. But
yeah, agreed.
I also think those are individual mistakes from Musa that shouldn't have happened. And you got to give him a little bit of a pass because you're talking about Giroud going into goal. Giroud's got 18 years on Musa. Musa's 20 years old. He can't even drink alcohol in his home nation. You know, like he's a kid. Like, what do you want from him? He's going to make mistakes. He's going to crumble under pressure sometimes, but it is what it is.
It was a big crumble.
It was a huge crumble. It was an apple crumble. But the reality is we still should have been able to come back, and nobody did. Nobody was able to slow down fucking Lecce after that. Like, you equalize with Lecce, or would they equalize against you? Okay, turn it on. Like, let's go. We have star players. We have Scudetto winners in this team. We have Champions League winners in this team. Like, we got to move forward. You know, we shouldn't be, unless it was like Udinese where they scored in the last minute, you know, and there's not much you could do, but we should be able to overcome conceding two goals when we had a two goal advantage against a team like Lecce. And the fact is, we couldn't. We got frustrated. I mean, you saw Moussa's yellow card after that. It was ridiculous. Then you saw Giroud get a red card for screaming about a handball, which I still don't understand where that was. Maybe you guys saw it. I never did. But to scream at the ref at 38 years old, you're talking about professionalism, being able to do everything. Keep a cool head, you know, because we had possession when he did that. So not only did he stop possession and give it to the other team, he got himself a red card. Now he's missing Fiorentina. Now we lost our leader on the pitch. It's like, what are you doing there, man? You know, that's not acceptable at any level. You can't be doing that. So that's bad. And then they scored that third goal that obviously got called off. But ultimately, we lost that game to Lecce, right? Like, we let them back in it, and they kept control, and we never once took charge. And it should never be like that. A team like Lecce is not someone you let this happen against. Like,
and Napoli, to say that it happened again, did it happen before against Napoli as well? Like, I suppose the one thing with Napoli is they've just sacked their manager. I know that they've not had a good start to the season, but they do have the quality on the pitch where they can hit you bang bang. They did it so many times last season. But then you learn from that, and you know that, okay, you might concede a goal and it halves the lead that you've got and everything, but you can turn to shithouses as Inter and Juve would do in that situation. They would make it incredibly difficult for the other team to get any kind of momentum to feed off. Why? Because they wouldn't dick around with the ball inside their own half. They'd pass it around. They'd kill time. They'd play for set pieces. They'd play for cheap fouls. They'd sit back a little bit and absorb pressure if they have to do. We don't. We just carry on running around like headless chickens. We have zero game management. And also, you know, the moments that are there, go on.
Pioli.
I'm in agreement on this one. I think
fucking hand.
I had a go. That was very respectful, I must say. Maybe we should bring that in as a system moving forward. But I remember having
AJ and Wolf will just be like raising our hands
throughout the entire episode. Like one of those Chinese cats in the window. I remember having a go at you after that Juve game and being like, oh, this is the game where you want to say Pioli out, you know, after a red card and them playing so negatively and stuff. And this is another game where you're like, okay, fuck, that doesn't fly. You know, that cannot be the end result when you're 2-0 up. I don't care how we've got there. And to an extent, the individual errors have obviously played a big part in this, but also you still have the opportunity to transmit some calm and some organization and some discipline to the team, and you failed to do so. You failed to get the team to calm it down when we needed to the most. Lecce, their starting lineup didn't really get anything going, but you look at the changes that they made going into the second half, and of course I can't get them off. Up now, here we go. So they brought on Gonzalez in midfield, who was much better than Rafia. He looked really good. Blin came on at full back. They had Sansone for Strefezza, who actually obviously scored the goal to make it 2-1 and was a bit of a nightmare to deal with. Piccoli, who nearly scored a 94th minute winner, and Venuti came on late on. That was less, but they made four changes before the 63rd minute, and they all made an impact, you know. And this is Lecce, a team without a deep squad. And unfortunately, we were conditioned by injuries. We had to make a couple of those early, but we got those changes wrong, and we were unable to wrestle back the game.
So you mentioned something about our discipline, so I wanted to look it up and just get confirmation on this. We have the second most yellow cards in the season at 33, behind Lecce at 36, and we had the most red cards with 4.
Fall.
And I mean, you look at the difference there is like Inter have the most penalties in Europe right now, whereas
they got 11 or something.
I think it's 9. I don't know. I don't know. I've mentioned Inter, so I'm going to get yelled at in the comments.
You're a secret Inter fan.
It's like you look at the difference and it's like, okay, well, we can't even keep cool heads. And that's something the manager is responsible for, right? Mm. He's supposed to teach you how to respond to those moments. So that's something you want to look at Pioli, because we're 12 games played, right? Like we're not even towards the winter break yet, and we've had 4 straight red cards, and they've all come towards big games. You know, Tomori missing the derby. We've had Maignan and Teo missing Napoli. We had someone missing Juve or some. No,
they missed Juve. They
were in Juve.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Chao got one against Juve, so he missed Udinese. Napoli. And then, four of those four, three are straight red cards as well.
Yep.
Which is okay when, you know, two of them were just one game bans, so it's the same as getting
No, those
yellows,
are four straight red cards, right? Giroud,
no,
Mike,
one,
Tomori
was two yellows against Roma.
Yeah.
But Giroud, for example, the most recent straight red card, which we thought was a double yellow at the time, but apparently a referee can rescind a yellow if the other yellow card offence happens like straight after. You know, the yellow can become a straight red if he keeps chirping. We're waiting to see what the sporting judge says about that, but he's getting a minimum two games and he could be looking at four if he said something blasphemous or he said something personally insulting towards the ref, which it sounds like he might have done. If we're without Giroud for four games and we're without Liao for the next two, potentially three, that's a real problem, and that comes from a lack of discipline, and it comes from being on edge. Giroud, a supposed leader of this team at 37, who has played in the biggest games imaginable, lost his head because we drew against Lecce. You know? Like, that's where we're at now. The players are on edge, and there's this whole environment of, like, paranoia. It's like everyone knows that we're in the shit, and everyone's looking at each other. How do we get out of this? And then the guys that you want to drag you out of it, purely restless on the sidelines, Giroud shouting at referees, getting himself sent off. It's not good, man. It's not good. Like, we're getting towards the point now where Napoli are about to snap up Igor Tudor, by the sounds of it, who I suggested as an interim last week. It's getting to the point now where I think stuff's stacking up, and injuries is another thing that is no longer coincidence or bad luck, given that this is the third season in a row, probably fourth if you count, you know, the post-lockdown stuff, where we've had an injury crisis to battle. We've had 24 injuries this season. 27 injuries this season now. Juve have had 10, Inter have had 7. This calendar year, stretching back to the back half of last season, if you add up all the days of absence that our players have had, players that are still on the team, so this includes Bennacer, who got injured back in May, 502 combined days of absence from injured players. The only starters, the only regular starters that are yet to suffer an injury this season, and I say this touching wood so as not to curse them, are Chao, Tomori and Reinders. Those are the only three in our typical starting 11 that are yet to miss a game through injury.
And two of them have been suspended.
Missed through suspension. So, injuries purely probably has some part to play, as do the athletic staff and stuff like that. He can barely field his fucking first choice starting 11 from one game to the next. In fact, he just can't. There's always something that happens.
When the owner buys players for depth and you still can't get the best out of them, like, that's not on the owner.
I mean, Chukwueze was the most expensive signing of the summer, and he was meant to be a quality rotation option with Pulisic. So far, I'm looking at him thinking he doesn't have it, man. Like, he's
a younger Messias with a little, a little flair.
Yeah, and do you think that's because he's actually bad, or do you think it's because Pioli can't get it out of him?
I mean, I didn't know a whole lot about him prior to him coming here. Like, obviously, I knew who he was, but I don't watch La Liga games, so... You know, all my like sample size has been comp videos where everyone looks like Jesus, and what we've seen at Milan, and it's not been good. So, yeah, I don't know.
What I will say as well is that we signed a player who led La Liga, or was he third? He either led or was third in La Liga last season in completed dribbles. And for me, he doesn't look like he wants to dribble anymore. He's looking for the first option to offload the ball. He's trying these crosses that are getting caught by the first man every day. Has he had the confidence coached out of him? That's the question. And then you start looking around and thinking, what could that be for? Right, top and flop, and then we'll fuck this game off. Top for me, I don't know. You can't pick Giroud because he then undid himself by getting sent off. Obviously, Reinders got the goal, but I think he was more wasteful than clinical. I thought Okafor did quite well when he came on, to be honest. He linked up better with the Teo than Liao had done up until that point. So I'd probably say him. But it's tough. There's a lot of leaders that deserted us in this game.
Yeah, that's a tough one to pick. I mean, really, like, am I going to give it to Reinders? I guess so, because at least he had a goal and didn't, like, directly cost us anything. I mean, yeah, he could have had an assist or two, I think, if his shooting was better, or if he would just pass the fucking ball like I've been begging him to do for 4 months now. But, I mean, the other goal scorer got a red card. You know, the other star player got injured in 10 minutes. The other ones were bang average. So, yeah, we don't have many choices here.
Mm. I'm going to go Reinders because he finally scored. He was wasteful, but, like, that's his normal self. So, but he finally bagged one, so.
I mean, that goal, I mean, I don't know what the hell happened to Lecce. Bashiroto gets dragged over one side and they just part like the Red Sea and he somehow hits it straight at the keeper and it goes through his legs. You know,
yeah,
he
it wasn't
didn't even
a good
find
goal.
A corner. Nope, it wasn't. But fair play, I'm happy for him that he got his goal. Flop, Musa, can we move
on?
Musa. Yeah. There's got to be no argument there, surely. We'll do a couple of questions and then we'll wrap this one up.
I have to bounce before we do questions. I have a meeting, so.
Okay, thank you, Maddie.
Thanks for joining.
See ya.
That was special guest Madison.
Yeah, he's a part-timer for that. We just slag him off now he's gone. Right, Kieran James asks, who would you rather start up top in the next game in the absence of Giroud? And there's a list. Number one, recall CDK from loan. Number two, sign Zlatan on a free. Number three, recall Origi from loan. Number four, Novak Djokovic. Number five, Jovic.
Honest to God, I think Zlatan's our best option.
Me too, man. No, do you know what I'd do? I'd start Okafor. Yeah. That should have been in there. I'd seriously recall him in January if we have any option to do that because he's looking good. He's got a match-winning brace at the weekend. I wouldn't start Luka Jovic against Fiorentina, but I think we're going to because it's against his old team, so he should be fired up for it. He's a natural centre-forward and all that. What I would start is Chukwueze, Okafor, Pulisic as the front three. Pulisic is going to be back for the game. We know that, and he can play on the left. So I would start that front three. It's more mobile. I think Fiorentina are suspect defensively and they'd have the movement to kind of drag them about. I ain't playing Jovic unless it's an absolute emergency. And I think in this situation, we have other options. So that's what I'd do.
I mean, that's probably the most dynamic way to go about it, but Pioli's not going to do that. It'll be Jovic.
Of course it will, yeah. Of course it will. We got a lot of questions about Pioli being sacked and being replaced. Over the international break, I feel like we're going to have to do a bonus on that just because so many people are asking about it. So we will leave it for now. Andrew Mahakata, sorry if I've butchered that. Milan Lab used to be the best for recovery and rehabilitation. What are they suggesting to Pioli to reduce these injuries that isn't working? Where do we... I mean, we did a bonus on the injuries, but we didn't really talk about what the absolute root causes of it might be, I suppose, aside from the firm pitch at Milanello. Who are we pointing the finger at? Did we just sack the entire coaching staff and medical staff? Like,
I mean, they're partially responsible, right? Like, you can't... Mm. It's not like it isn't possible. Real Madrid just fired their entire medical staff because of injuries. Like, that's what a serious
one player
club does. Yeah. That's a serious club. And then you're seeing the reports like, we don't want to do it because it's just... not the way it works in Italy. It can be the way it works if we're serious. You know, it doesn't have to be this fucking kumbaya till the end. Like, we don't all have to be in this together. We can fix problems if it's one person. But
and the management have proven there is no room for sentimentality. I don't care purely if it's your friend who is the athletic trainer of this team. These guys sacked Paolo Maldini because he wasn't doing a good enough job in their eyes. So just
maybe this
Fellaini
is dumb...
can say, sorry, we're sacking Osti, who is the chief trainer.
Maybe this is a dumb question, but can the ownership or the management, the upper management, sack him? Isn't he a part of Pioli's staff? Wouldn't Pioli have to do it?
No, they can. He's employed by the club.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was like...
Obviously, you run the risk then of upsetting Pioli, who might then turn around and be like, I don't have what I want to work with anymore. But I don't think realistically even he must be pissed off because, he, as mentioned, he doesn't have the same starting lineup, the one he wants, from one game to the next because of injuries. And the stats are beyond the joke. We must be the most impacted team in Europe when it comes to injuries. So therefore, you would try and change that. Again, like we say about Pioli, and the same applies to injuries. If we look at what we have, the least we can aspire to be is, or the least we can aspire to have is the best head coach and the best medical staff in the city. Try to be better than Inter at that, and then we're in a good place, right? Well, Inter have got a very good injury record. They've had 7 injuries this season to our 27. They've got a better head coach at the moment. You know, I'm not trying to turn it into a comparison between the two, but don't just think we've got to stay like this because otherwise we're going to upset something. It's already been upset. Like, the situation is a joke. It doesn't even have to be, right, that you sack Osti. If you really like him as a bloke, whatever, get someone in to help him, someone with new ideas. I don't care if it's a student who has a degree in sports science, who's never kicked a ball in their life. They might have ideas in how to help. There was a report saying that we're going to look at the NFL and some of the physical preparations in that because it's similar in terms of intense bursts and all that kind of stuff. Anything, just a change in ideas, you know?
The NFL's not going to work. I could tell you why they don't have many injuries, and it's, you know,
54-man squads.
Well, it's injections. They're taking steroids, is what I'm saying.
Why don't we try that? We should get involved in
it. It works for Atalanta.
Yeah, should do. Final question, then. Michael Gambino, based on recent form and injuries, what is the number one priority for the January window? We kind of answered this most weeks now. But I guess it's centre-back versus striker, right?
Yeah, and it seems like the reports that are coming out today and yesterday as we get close to January, you know, rumour mill starting up again, it seems like it's mostly centre-backs that we're being linked with. We've been linked with that one striker in Germany, starts with a G, I can't remember his name.
Yeah,
Grassi, and he's been in hot form here, but
28.
Is that our priority? I don't know, it's tough. I think we need another centre-back. I think Giroud's still firing well, we just apparently had this new issue of his hothead, which is brand new. So got to take care of that. Yeah. Maybe he's still mad about that wheelchair kid pranking him the other day.
What a dickhead. What a dickhead that guy was, by the way. Apparently he did something similar to Pioli. I've not seen that video, but Pioli joked about it and took it well, whereas Giroud was like, wait, why have you just told me to fuck off? I don't care if you're in a wheelchair. What? Anyway, if you've not seen that video, don't go looking for it because it'll piss you off as much as it did me. Guirassy, if it's true, he's got 14 goals in 9 Bundesliga games. Good record. I'm always wary about signing strikers from the Bundesliga, but that's a very good record. And frankly, Jovic is a scarecrow at this point. If he is available for 70.5 million, which is the rumour that his release clause is, then you probably do that in January. That money was available for Taremi in the summer, and we didn't spend it. So spend the same amount and get in someone who's a striker in their prime, red hot form, full of confidence, and I think he'd jump at the move as well. And then next summer you reevaluate. Do you need to invest again in another striker? So you've got new striker Guirassy, Giroud as a third option at 38. Or can you put more faith in Colombo, you know, when he comes back from his loan spell? And then for centre-back, we need to decide what we want. I put a tweet out saying, I don't understand why we're being linked with so many young centre-backs. Like, we've got project centre-backs at the moment. We've got Simic, who can't get game in the league at the moment. And Siala from the Primavera is not a million miles away. Obviously, Pellegrino's out injured, but he'll be back end of December. Kalulu's still young. Kiao's still young. Tomori is going to hit his prime years soon. I wouldn't mind replacing Kier or adding to Kier's leadership with another player who is of prime years. I think we do. I'd love to have Romagnoli as the third option this season, honestly. Let him go on a free. He was our captain. He understood the biggest occasions. Yeah, he had some bad performances, don't get me wrong. But I think as a backup, he would have been fine. And yet here we are, we're very front-loaded in terms of age in the centre-back position, and then we've got Kier, who's the complete other side of the hill and can't string together 2 games fully fit. So I'd be looking to bring someone in who is a bit more of an experienced head, to be honest, even if it has to be alone until the end of the season. I don't really... I can't buy into like Van Bremen from Basel and you know, Lloyd Kelly from Bournemouth and stuff. I just don't see what difference they're gonna make.
Yeah, you know, I watched Bournemouth beat Newcastle this weekend. I don't even know if Lloyd Kelly was playing. Like I couldn't point him out. But they looked good. So I guess if that worked out, then sure. But yeah, it's just like, I don't know, man. I don't see anyone that we're linked with right now that is really going to make a big difference for us defensively, but we need a new center back. We need just another body at this point. Mm-hmm. So I guess get Lloyd Kelly if that's available on a decent deal.
Yeah, his contract runs out at the end of the season. I actually kind of like Lloyd Kelly. However, it's a different thing playing for Bournemouth compared to playing at San Siro in front of 70,000 people. I'm not saying he can't do it. Yeah, true. He's 25 as well, so it's a good age. He's left-sided, which I think is a big thing. I think we're clearly looking for a left-sided centre-back, a left-footed centre-back. However, you know, you just want a better name. Are we still in this? And it applies to the squad in general. Are we still in this thing where every player or 9/10 of the players that we sign have to be young players that we can work on and develop? I know this is our project and I know it's what Redbird are going to buy into, but I just look at the other teams and I think we could do with some prime players, man. We really could, because we're either too old or too young, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I know the core have developed and I know some of them haven't matured yet. There's still room for growth. I get all that, but it just doesn't move me. Like I think we've recapped games like the Lecce one, the Udinese one, the Juve one, Chelsea got sent off, the Napoli game, where you just need someone who's been there and done it and can galvanize the players and say, whoa, let's slow this down because otherwise we're going to concede again. You look around and there's an absence of that at the moment, and I'm just not sure that Van Bremen from Basel is the guy who's going to do that, you know? But yeah, Lloyd Kelly's all right. That's where I'm going to end it. Yeah, thank you everybody for listening to an hour of ranting and raving and all that stuff. We are back next week. I'm back anyway for an international break episode. I'm going to try get a guest on. More details potentially to be disclosed on that front. But yeah, these two guys are going to be away.
Thanksgiving at the holiday. Yeah, I'm not just taking a day off, I promise. I have family in town. I don't have a choice.
I thought Thanksgiving was a Thursday.
It sure is, but when you have your in-laws and your whatever sister, and I guess they're all in-laws, you know, when you have all of them in town staying at your house, two of them staying in your office, it's gonna be a little difficult. So
yeah, get them on. They can be guests for the week. But no, that's it. So you're gonna have to put up with my ugly mug for next week. Plus hopefully a guest. It might be Lorenzo, which would be even more disappointing. But anyway, I've been your host Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep, it's a good one. Jokes on you guys. I won't read your comments since I won't be here next week. So save your hate for then.
Thank you, everyone. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio...